This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Issues 2017. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. Welcome to Issues 2017, sir.
Thank you.
You are actually District Attorney for the 18th Judicial District.
That's correct.
Explain that. How that works around
the
state.
Sure. We have 105 counties, and most of the counties are small enough in terms of population that district court judges are divided into districts. And so, like Sumner County, for instance, south of us is in a district with, I think it's Harper, Kingman, Barber, and I think Pratt County, and that's a district. And so each county within that district has a county attorney. But Sedgwick County is its own district. Our judges only go to the county courthouse here. So it's a district unto itself. So when I'm the elected prosecutor, I'm the district attorney.
It's an elected position.
It is.
When were you elected the first time?
2012.
That's the only time right now.
Right? Well, and then reelected in 2016.
Well, I was going to say four. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. I'm bringing you up today.
Every 4 years.
Bringing me up today.
There you go.
You had a wide range of background before getting this job. Tell us about that. Some of the work you did as an attorney.
Well, I started off in Geary County, Junction City, after law school. Worked up there for a couple of years and then came back to Wichita. It's now been, well, let's see, this week, I believe, or last week, it was 20 years now that I've been in the DA's office. Started off in the gang unit doing general property or doing violent crime, and then I had several sort of little odd niches that I was asked to fill, arson cases, which are a very unusual niche sort of type of case. But I did arson cases. I did any number of things. But then in about 99, 2000, I guess it was, I transferred to the Sex Crimes Domestic Violence Unit and ultimately was in charge of that unit when I was elected the district attorney. So we prosecuted, obviously, child and adult sex crimes, child abuse, domestic violence in the family, elder abuse, and a few other sundry things that would come our way.
A wide range, as I said, of experience. Now, arson crime, we don't hear a lot about that.
No, they're unusual crimes. They don't occur a lot in terms of actually going to a felony offense. I mean, there's lots of incidents where people will set a fire here or there and it'll get out of hand. And then the question is, was it intentional? Was it designed to, you know, try to get an insurance settlement? Or was it just somebody messing around with fire who, you know, didn't know what they were doing and got out of control? So
how often is it something that somebody's trying to collect that insurance money?
Not as often as you'd think.
Yeah.
But it does happen. I tried one, I don't know, it's been, I guess, probably 6 years ago where a contractor had purchased a home and the house burned. Significant damage to this house. It was a $450,000, probably $500,000 house. And just sort of coincidentally, we found out that he had taken out two separate insurance policies on the place for, I don't know, I want to say $600,000 or $700,000 a piece. And that didn't make a lot of sense. And fairly quickly, we figured out what had happened. And he was prosecuted and convicted for arson. So.
How many people fall under your responsibility?
Let's see. We now have 55 lawyers who work for me and about 65, 70 support staff. We have a few part-timers. So on a given day, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 to 130 people who work for the Office of the District Attorney. And we also have two buildings. I think people may not recognize that as well. Downtown at the courthouse, which is where I think most people probably suspect I spend my days at 535 North Main. What's at the northwest corner of Central and Main. But we also, if you're heading south on the canal route, just past Kellogg, if you look back to the west, you see a complex back in there. That's the juvenile division, and that's where the juvenile detention facility is. It's where the juvenile courthouse is. It's where all the juvenile offender cases are handled. It's where all of the child-needed care cases for kids who've been abused or neglected. And then it doesn't entirely fit, but it's where we had space in the court system. It's also where the probate department happens to be right now, which is a little doesn't maybe make a lot of sense, but that again, that's where we had space, and so that's where the probate judge handles probate cases as well.
Is yours a state budget or a county budget?
County. Board of County Commission sets my budget, and this next, usually about March, we start having those conversations about what we're going to need moving forward and in terms of personnel and in terms of space. Oddly enough, right now, the largest issue facing me or facing my office with respect to budget is space. The juvenile division's doing okay on space because the county put quite a bit into infrastructure down there several years ago and redid the courthouse and so we're doing okay down there. But at the courthouse up in downtown, I'm just basically out of space at this point. If I have an attorney who I'm gonna who's ready to transfer back to the downtown division, and she asked me yesterday, where's my office? And I said, I don't know right now. I don't have a free office to give her. So that's an issue we're attending to right at the moment.
What does it cost to run your office?
Well, I think our budget is 9 to 10 million, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Making the news the last few months, opioid addiction and the growing numbers of overdoses. I think one Ohio county is really having a tough time.
Yeah.
Many of these are fatal, too.
Yeah. New England is where the first call, the first canary in the coal mine sort of calls came. This is going to be an issue, folks, and then it started to sweep across or spread. Maybe sweep seems a little hyperbolic, but spread across the country. Sort of the old Rust Belt seems to be really getting hammered right now. West Virginia, Northern Kentucky, Ohio. When I read reports, that's where some of the most recent numbers are coming out of. And what you're finding is that people, it starts primarily, and I'll say this with the caveat that, you know, these are generalizations, but based on what I've read and what I've talked to folks from those areas, it's starting with pills, Lortabs, and that sort of thing that you can get prescribed for pain. People start taking them, they get addicted to them, they run out of their prescription, they try to get more, and at some point they can no longer get them legally. They turn to either people who will sell it on the street, has a black market value, and at some point, to feed the addiction, people turn to heroin. And because it's the same, I guess, as I understand it, the same type of high, but it's much cheaper. The problem with heroin is, most of the time, I mean, if you take a pill, you can fairly well have the expectation, at least if it was manufactured by a pharmaceutical company, I take this pill, I know the reaction I will get. I take two pills, I know the reaction I will get. If you put heroin into your system, that's typically ingested with or put into your system with a needle. Once that's in you, it's hard to, it's almost impossible to regulate the effect it's going to have. And you hope that it affects you the way it did last week when you got high. But it could be a higher potency. It could be a different quality. And what I guess they're finding a lot of is that the low-grade stuff, the people who are dealing it are cutting it or are adding to it with other drugs that are highly, frankly, they're fatal if they're put in too high a dose, fentanyl and other things like that. And so the unlike crack and meth, which, you know, the crack epidemic of the 80s and the meth that's taken place in the 90s and 2000s, as bad as those are in their own right, the number of fatalities with this drug epidemic is what's really unusual or really getting people's attention. You take the stuff and you die, and it's happening by the droves, sometimes in the tens of, or 20s. I've heard numbers as high as hundreds in a weekend in certain cities back east. So that's obviously a real concern.
How would you, if you characterize the problem here in Sedgwick County?
You know, at the end of the day, meth right now is still the drug of choice in Sedgwick County. We are seeing heroin. We are seeing opioid-type crime, possession cases, certainly at higher rates than we did 10 years ago. But we're nowhere near epidemic stage at this point. However, the fact that we're starting to see them, has certainly got the attention of law enforcement and my office and the city prosecutors. And so we've taken it upon ourselves to try to, warn people. So folks, well, what can we do about it? What's something citizens can actually do other than wring their hands and, get the attention of their lawmakers? There's one very simple thing that has a pretty significant impact, and that is getting rid of your old pills. Go to your medicine cabinet. I've played football in high school and I've had several knee surgeries over the years to clean up bad knees. Seems like every time I go, I end up getting a prescription for Lortabs or something like that. And I looked a year or two ago and I had a couple bottles of that stuff that I'd never used. I don't like the way it makes me feel, so I never take them. It's time to get rid of those. If you look in your medicine cabinet, you've got Lortabs and pills like that, pain meds that are opioid-based pain meds. There's actually, I think, two Walgreens, and there may be other places as well, but the Walgreens at Central and Hillside and the one at Central and Mays, I understand, will both accept pills. Take them in there and say, I want to turn these in and get rid of them, and they will do that for you. The Attorney General Schmidt, his office, issued a press release, I want to say in October. They did a kind of a statewide push for people to turn their pills in. And I want to say, off the top of my head, the number was like 15,000 pounds of pills were collected statewide in Kansas. So that's a first very good step. Get those things out of your house. And I don't want to sound alarm bells or anything, but I'm talking to police, and I know I'll say this with caution, but if you go to the pharmacy and you get a prescription for pain medic, because you do have pain that needs managed, and that's a legitimate concern, of course, watch who's around you at the pharmacy. Don't let somebody follow you home, because all they want is your pills. And I haven't seen any cases here like that, but I have heard the police say, be aware of your surroundings. But a lot of times guys just do burglaries. They're not looking for anything else other than pills, because they have a street value or they just are trying to feed their own habits. So, these are the kind of things I think people need to be aware of.
What are the powerful new drugs that have surfaced?
There's nothing new under the sun right now. It seems like, honestly, if you were to ask the cops, what's the most common drug we're seeing on the street? Is it something new? Is there something different? And they'd say, not to be crass, but the common refrain is meth is still king. That's what the police will tell you.
Okay.
Meth is still the crime of, or the drug of choice, excuse me. And I would add, too, that meth not only is it an insidious drug in that it has an incredible detrimental effect on people's health. It's almost part of pop culture now to talk about people you can tell from their teeth and their skin and all the different visual effects you can see of meth, but it drives a lot of crime too. I can't tell you how many homicides and other types of crimes are really driven by people out of their heads on meth, or fighting over meth debts and trying to feed a habit. So a lot of collateral consequences of that drug in particular.
You're listening to Issues 2017 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. Let's talk about, switch gears here a little bit. Tell us about illegal immigration in Sedgwick County.
Okay.
What did we call those places? What we are or we're not, sanctuary places?
Yeah,
we are or we are not or whatever.
Well, yeah. So I guess I have if Jeff Easter were here, I'd defer to him because he could take up the balance of your time, giving your listeners what for on that. But
okay.
So here's what I'll say about that. That's in my mind a manufactured term. There are certain cities like. And I understand San Francisco and a few others, some of the larger urban areas, mainly in the West Coast, have mayors and city councils who have adopted or embraced that term, and they say we tell our police not to enforce immigration rules. okay, I'm not sure what role a mayor frankly has. If the mayor of any particular city told the police chief you will or won't enforce certain laws, I think the police chief would probably tell the mayor, you'll need to find a new chief, because you know they don't answer to mayors, they follow the law. And certainly that's the case in Wichita. And I'm not giving Mayor Longwell a hard time, because he's not certainly done anything like that. But yeah. The long story short is, for anyone to be taken into custody, they have to have there has to be probable cause to believe they committed a crime. And while listeners may not like won't like this, there is a reality, and that is that there is no crime for being, and meaning there's no crime for being static. I'm put it in a different, less egg-headish way, or less wonkish way. Coming across the border illegally is a crime. Being here after having crossed the border is not a crime. It is not a crime under federal law to be here. It is a crime to come here illegally. And so the feds, through the ICE agents, will enforce that. But a police officer can't just walk up and say, you look like you might be here illegally, I'm going to take you into custody. That would be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And so the second thing is, once they're held in custody, there has to be some finding of probable cause, and then a judge has to set bond. And so the headache or the disconnect that occurred for a short period of time between the sheriff's office and maybe the ICE was that the sheriff, through legal counsel, looked at other cases where there have been sheriff's departments who have been sued successfully by people who were held indefinitely on an ICE hold. And they said, if you're going to put a hold on them, then come get a probable cause and get a warrant, or you know, whatever, get a judge to endorse this. And if you don't, I can't hold these folks for very long. Well, from that, frankly, in my opinion, a rational response from our sheriff, folks from other parts of the country said, labeled us a sanctuary city. Well, I would bristle at that, and the sheriff is fully capable of taking those folks to task, because that's frankly a wild misstatement of what the sheriff did. He was following the law. And frankly, saving the taxpayers the inevitable lawsuit. And so it's probably more of an answer than you're looking for, but
it's a good answer.
The bottom line is that we're not a sanctuary city. We never were. And other than people who want to be called that, and I suppose they're free to call themselves that if you want, it's not a term that actually has any meaning in the law.
You know, we in media and politicians, we like to make it as short as we can.
Sure.
And that sanctuary city thing, a little bit of a mistake.
A lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
Like most things in life.
Give us an update on human trafficking in Sedgwick County.
You know, again, I think we have probably been more focused on this in Sedgwick County since the late, I'm not sure what to call it, 2008, 2009, the early 2000s, I guess. And as a result, I think people in this jurisdiction are probably more aware of it, maybe, than other parts of the state and probably even the country. Now, I think that may be changing. It's becoming more and more well-known, and people understand the issue and the problem. It's frankly getting the attention it deserves. And I would say the reason in Sedgwick County we have paid perhaps more attention to it is we have, for the longest time since 1985, we have what's called an Exploited and Missing Child Unit, EMCU, and it's a joint task force between the Wichita Police Department, the sheriff, and what used to be SRS, now DCF, the Department of Children and Families. And they work together and have since the early 80s. Like I said, I think it was actually before Nola Folston. I think it was Clark Owens was the DA. I want to say Mike Hill and probably Richard LeMunyon, I think, would have been the chief of police at the time. If it was someone else, I'll apologize, but that's my memory, at least, of the era.
I think you're right.
That sounds right. And they got together and decided this would be a good thing, that these cases would be worked in as a joint enterprise, social workers and cops working together. And so they started doing that, and it has been, in fact, what they envisioned, a tremendous boon to law enforcement in Sedgwick County. And we've really benefited from that over the years. What I'm getting at is that outfit, because they've been so focused on child-specific abuse, was one of the first to notice that we had a lot of young women, young girls, who were being prostituted. And I make the distinction of saying being prostituted as opposed to working as prostitutes, because I think that's probably an old some nomenclature that deserved a proper burial, and it got it in state law a few years ago. But at any rate, these detectives have been paying attention to this, and as a result, they brought it to my office. And so we started paying attention to it, and so we We're pretty aggressive about prosecuting these cases and have been really since, I'd say, for the past, well, it's 2017 toward the end, so probably, honestly, the last 10 years or so, there's been a real concerted effort. And so because it's on our radar and it's on law enforcement's radar, these are the kind of cases we obviously put a lot of attention into and have specialized training for our prosecutors and make a priority to handle these cases.
Let's talk about scams for a little bit.
Sure.
One of the most often reported type scams that you see.
Well, again, there's not a lot new under the sun, and it feels like when I say this, your listeners are going to say, oh, yeah, we know that. But just last week I signed papers to open an inquisition, which is an ability to issue subpoenas before a case is actually filed, so we can help investigators get the information they need, typically in white-collar type crimes. But the petition, or the affidavit, rather, signed by the law enforcement officer, relayed how a woman got a call from what she believed to be her grandson, I believe it was, who told her he was in custody. He and some friends had gone south of the border, I believe it was, for the weekend, got picked up, and grandma, please, you got to send money. You're going to get a call from a lawyer here in a minute. He'll tell you where to send it to bond me out. A minute later, she gets a call from a guy who says, I'm your grandson's lawyer, and you need to send, $5,000 to this address, this bank account, whatever. And she did it. And I thought, I have probably pointed out that particular scam in press releases and in I write a little article most months in the Active Aging that goes out each, I think it's a monthly period, magazine, mm-hmm, or newspaper. And, just every chance I get, I mention that scam and others on the same theme. And still, again, we had a citizen in Sedgwick County who was taken. So that's a long way of saying it's that scam, and it's others that are on the same basic premise. You get a call from the IRS. You get a call from the sheriff. You get a call from my office. I thought that was pretty bold. Yeah. Somebody called saying they're from the DA's office. And if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you're going to – or rather, if you because you have failed to show up for jury duty, because you have failed to pay a traffic ticket, because you didn't respond to a subpoena, you are going to be arrested momentarily and put in jail, sent to prison. But you can we can resolve it right now over the phone if you'll give me your credit card information. Run to Walgreens, run to Walmart, buy a Green Dot card, which is essentially a prepaid credit card. Load it with $500, give me that number, and thank you very much, and okay, we won't come arrest you now. And people still get taken in by that, and it's really, really sad.
Publishers Clearinghouse doesn't call people.
No.
Somebody called us the other night.
Oh, really?
And we stayed on the line with this bird for a while, and one of us, my wife is on the phone, I'm doing some checking. Yeah. I finally got it. Wait a minute, buddy.
Yeah.
And poof, he was gone.
People ask.
It scares you.
People ask, what can I do? Well, one of the things is most, not everybody, I suppose, but most phones now have some ability.
ID.
And I would encourage people, especially if you, maybe some people don't keep a landline, but if they're on the phone with somebody and you go, well, let me call you back. What number should I call you? And they say, No, this has to happen right now. The end, just you're done. I mean, there's no reason on earth to deal with somebody in that kind of a high-pressure sales setting. But every time I've gotten a call like that, every time somebody else has gotten a call that I know, you quickly Google the number, and it's almost inevitable you're going to get a litany of don't answer this number kind of warnings on
warnings
Google.
Warnings on it?
Yeah. I mean, people go to blogs and whatnot and say, this number called my house, and they're scammers. And, now the elderly, who these folks prey on a lot, may not be as apt to jump on a cell phone or a tablet or something and quickly Google the number that they're on the line with. But, bottom line is there's no one legitimate in governments, especially, that's ever going to call you on the phone and demand payment over the phone on the threat that if you don't, you're going to be arrested and incarcerated. That will never happen. The IRS doesn't do it. The sheriff won't do it. I certainly don't do it. And there's no one else in a official government position who would do the same. So please, and it's not only your listeners, but I'd encourage them to, talk to their elderly neighbors and family members who may still live alone and keep a phone, to be aware of that as well.
Well, we were offered $6 million in new Durango.
you know?
And I thought, nobody does that for me. Sorry. Too good to be true,
Too good to be true.
Sometimes that's what happens. Yeah. Well, gang still a problem?
You know, I would say that there was an uptick this last spring and summer, and the police had a pretty robust response. If you noticed, let's see, I think it was last week now, Chief Ramsey had a press conference where he mentioned not only the fact that the police department had responded with a task force, but that it had been so successful that they are planning on reinstituting it here shortly.
Well, listen, we're out of time.
Okay.
It goes fast.
It does.
We do. We have a good time when we get together. And then thank you for sharing so much information with us. We appreciate it. A lot of good stuff there. A lot of things that maybe our listeners hadn't thought about for a while. Our guest, Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2017. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drive deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Some people play by the rules, but the real game changers break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we're talking to the risk takers, the rebels, and the ones rewriting the playbook. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.